Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Oh!
Let him play!
He wins. Great steak. Smells like poop.
Honestly, like if Urban Meyer wants to come to Connecticut, bring him on. I mean, come on. I'll take him too.
Nia Jackson, I think, weighs 280 pounds.
Oh!
Can we isolate that clip? Nia Jack weighs 280 pounds. Oh!
Let her play.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for the Big A to Z show and football show. That's right, we're going to do some sports tonight here in the city from the Dave in the City studios in Southern California. Getting a little warm as we record this program tonight. Maybe that's good news, maybe it's not, but it really looks nice out there. Absolutely. Let's bring in the next topic of conversation, and that's, of course, our anthology. And with it comes some sports talk. We haven't done that in a little bit, so let's get it going with a very different type of NFL draft. Even with all that's going on around us, we still have the ability to do a draft preview. So I am happy to share that Ron in New Jersey is back with us, and we're going to get it all rolling as our A to Z series anthology brings us up to the letter O. All right, we're on the clock. It's time to do our 2020 NFL draft preview, which is remarkable in and of itself to do it about the time that it was originally scheduled in the first place. But with coronavirus shutting a lot of travel down, shutting a lot of gatherings down, it's going to be a very different draft this year, and it's going to end up on the internet. Yeah, no, seriously, that's not a joke. It's actually going to be on the internet. They're going to use Microsoft Teams to broadcast the draft results. They sent hats to different players, different prospective candidates, in order to get them to select their team. So they're finding ways to make the drama happen, even though you don't have people around and you don't have everybody gathered in one place. So it's going to be interesting, and I think for a lot of people it'll be a welcome change of pace, because we haven't had anything resembling a sporting event for the last month and a half. So with that, let's bring in our co-host for this evening. It's Ron in New Jersey. Hi, Ron. How's it going tonight?
Dave, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, I'm all right. How's everything with you and the kids and the family?
Oh, well, you know, it hasn't changed much since the last time we spoke. Still under quarantine, and you know, every day is like Groundhog Day. So yeah, you know, thank God the NFL draft gives us something to look forward to, even though who knows if we'll even see the NFL this year or what. But at least it's you know, it's something to look forward to. The first real sporting thing we've had to look forward to, like you said, in the past month and a half. So
yeah,
I'm excited about it.
Yeah, you're right. I think it is too. I don't believe, you know, everything else had been like fake games, video games.
Yeah.
Classic games. There's no actual thing, and this is the first actual thing we've had since mid-March, right?
Right, unless you count like the WrestleMania or, you know, WWE.
They did do that. That's right.
which I don't think we can actually count that. So yeah, I mean, it's the first actual sports that we can discuss.
Yeah,
and you know, at least it's something.
It is. And it sounds like many of the important parts of what an NFL draft is can still take place with it being online. And as you probably know, you can still do meetings online. People still do, you know, they teach courses online. They have workshops online. There are presentations. I mean, it's not the same. But here are some of the things that can make the NFL draft a pretty watchable experience. And I'll break down some of the items that they are going to get into. Obviously, we know that you can't have it more than, I don't know, like three people in a room at the same time in many cases. So what they're going to end up doing is they're going to have a lot of people on video. And what's clever is that they've utilized Microsoft sponsorship to make to their advantage. And they've implemented Microsoft Teams, which is a competitor to Zoom. And in their way of getting people together and doing meetings and having people broadcast their meetings on over the internet, So that's it'll be interesting to see if teams holds up over this much bandwidth and this many high profile personalities. So that's going to be interesting. You know, it was going to be in Vegas. There was going to be an entire takeover of the Las Vegas Strip. The Strip itself is closed, so obviously that's off the table. It'll be an interesting time, and I wanted to ask you first, Ron, what do you see as some of the exciting elements of an online draft, and what do you see as some of the challenges?
Well, you know, to be honest with you, I actually don't mind this setup this year. Because I do think a lot of the frills and the pomp and the you know, all the extras that the NFL does every year with the draft, it can be a little bit tedious at times, especially in the first round. You know, I think last year might have been a faster first round than normal, but I mean, you're talking about 5 hours to get in 30 picks, and that's on a good year. And, you know, especially if your team is picking in, you know, the late teens or the 20s, I mean, you're not really locked in if you're not at NFL draft in until probably, you know, 10, 11 o'clock at night. And it does, the experience gets to be a little bit overwhelming, in my opinion. And it has, especially in the past, like 5-10 years where they've moved it out to different locations, especially this year in Vegas, it was going to be on an island. You know, in the middle of Vegas, and you know you're going to get the special, you know, draft pick readers, and you know they're going to stop and do the Pledge of Allegiance, and you know this and that in the middle, you know, and it gets to be, you know, it gets to be a little bit overwhelming. I almost like watching the second and third rounds and rounds 4 through 7 a little bit better than round one, mm-hmm. just because, you know, round one is more of a show than the other rounds. And I like the shorter time period. So I'm hoping that this year cuts down on a lot of that. And, you know, especially, you know, I know ESPN for a long time, they were trying to beat everybody to the pick and what the pick was. So they would show the kids back in the green room on the phone before the pick was made. And it ruined the, you know, the surprise of the pick, which is, you know, a big thing for most people. So I'm hoping that, this year they go back to basics. And I think they have the ability to do that with, the online scenario. And obviously, you know, I do think there's going to be technical glitches at some point. I mean, it's just to be expected, right? I mean, it's a 3-4 hour event with 30 plus teams and, you know, the NFL and the different networks all doing it remotely. So you're going to be getting, I'm sure, glitches along the way. But, you know, that's, you know, that it's the new normal, right? I mean, it's what we deal with in our everyday life, and maybe that adds a little bit of the excitement or the you know, the watchability to it, is, you know, because you know there's some teams. I mean, Dave Gettleman on the Giants, you know, he's not going to know how to work a computer, and you know that there's going to be some issues there. So I think it adds to the you know, to the unpredictability of the draft, and. I'm excited to see how it all goes down, to be honest with you.
Yeah, there will definitely be some drama and entertainment value in how they execute the technical aspect of it. I mean, speaking from someone who has a background in it, I think I'm very intrigued to see how they use technology that we use at our office every day. Granted, we're not really with teams in terms of doing video stuff yet, so that will be interesting because it's not as... probably not as battle tested as Zoom is right now, because more people are talking about Zoom. So that could be a good thing too, because maybe it means the bandwidth won't be so heavy for their servers. We'll see, right? So it'll be very interesting. Now for the draft itself, a lot of talk has been about the wide receiver class. They say it's going to be really good, and they also like defensive line, and cornerback has been looked at as a pretty good one, as a pretty good position to draft, cornerback, and then quarterback, you have the big three. You have Joe Burrow, Tua Tagovailoa, and Justin Herbert. And we'll get to the quarterback spot as a separate feature, but just in general, What do you see? Which positions do you see as the biggest positions of strength in terms of depth for this draft?
Oh, by far, it's got to be wide receiver. I mean, you're talking about guys who are probably going to go in the second and third round who, you know, in most other years would probably be at least borderline first round picks. But I mean, it's just so there's so many receivers in this draft who you can make an argument could be a starter in the league. And I mean, you're talking about getting guys in the sixth and seventh round, you know, when you look at the prospect lists who can make a difference in the NFL, you know, depending on which situation they go to. And especially you know, the top three receivers in the draft, Jerry Jeudy, CeeDee Lamb, and Henry Ruggs. I mean, those guys, any other year, you know, you're probably talking about one of those guys being a top 10 pick. This year, you know, maybe some other positions push them back a little bit, but they're still, you know, a heck of a group to pick from, which is, you know, you get different years where you might have one receiver who's highly thought of, maybe two. To have three that, you know, should be top 15 picks is pretty rare. And, you know, just the overall depth of the class is really astounding. As far as what other positions have a lot of depth, excuse me, offensive tackle, there might not be those guys in the later rounds who, you know, are immediate starters or will start, you know, in year one or two, but the four guys that they discuss going at the top of the draft, Jedrick Wills, Tristan Wirfs, Mekhi Becton, and who's the other guy? Andrew Thomas. You know, those are four guys who, again, any other year, you know, if there wasn't four of them, you know, each single one of those guys would still be considered top 10 picks, and you have four coming out all at the same time. So the top of the offensive tackle class is really good this year. And you're going to see probably a few more guys who, you know, were initially thought of as second or third rounders actually get pushed up this year. Just because the back end of the offensive tackle depth isn't there. So you're going to see a lot of teams prioritize those guys and reach for them in the first round. So you could see maybe six or seven go in round one. Other groups, you know, it's a strange year. Like you said, the top three quarterbacks are there, and really after that, there's not much. Mm-hmm. But another you know, position actually that I think, you know, looks very good depth-wise is running back. You know, especially when you talk about the top three guys or the consensus top three guys, which is DeAndre Swift, Jonathan Taylor out of Wisconsin, and J.K. Dobbins. I mean, those guys, we know that running backs really don't get picked in the first round anymore, but you could make the case for any of those three guys to go in round one. So to be able to get those guys, you know, in the beginning to middle to end of round two, I think is great value because they're all really good players. And even the kid from LSU, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, he's another guy who, I mean, these guys are, you know, I know the running back position is devalued today in the NFL, but these guys are difference makers from day one, you know, even if they are just third down backs. I mean, we know the way that the NFL works now. A lot of the offense is short, quick passes, and you need those running backs who can catch those passes and open up the outside for the wide receivers. So they're still important, in my opinion. So you actually have a lot of depth there at running back this year, which is really rare because we haven't seen that in a long time. So, yeah, so those are, I think, the positions that have the most depth and probably the ones with the least amount. You're talking about edge rushers. Defensive line doesn't really have much outside of a couple guys in the first round. And the safety position is pretty bare this year, which is, you know, it's deviating from the past couple of years where we've seen a lot of good safeties coming out, like Jamal Adams and Malik Hooker and safeties like that. So this year is a pretty down year for safeties as well.
Yeah, you're right. I ranked the safeties way down in my list of depth rankings. Though I did have the linemen up higher, but I think the reason I put them higher is because I think those guys that you mentioned on the edge, like there's not a lot of depth, but those three guys at the top are really good. Chase Young, I think, is just an amazing player. And, you know, there's a lot of debate about whether he's going to be picked first overall or whether Burrow will be. And, I mean, until the Bengals tried to spoil it with their little note today. But assuming that the Bengals don't have a pick actually in, and I don't know if that's even true or not. There's definitely some talk about whether they'd go him or whether they'd go with Young. And I don't think there's a wrong answer here. I mean, me, I would go with Chase Young because he just was on every play. He was really good. But we're, you know, how would you evaluate that? I mean, is he really first overall good to you?
I think he is. Yeah, I think he is. And I think, you know, in another year, maybe he goes overall number one. I don't think there's any chance that Joe Burrow doesn't go first overall. I think that's a lock, and I think it's been a lock probably since, you know, December or whenever the Bengals locked up that first overall pick.
yeah, that's true.
You know, because, you know, and let's be honest, they need a quarterback. They need to move on from Andy Dalton.
Yeah.
You know, and you think about Joe Burrow, you know, he's an Ohio kid.
Yeah,
you know, he's a plug and play type of quarterback. He's, you know, I'm not completely sold on Joe Burrow being, you know, this all world, you know, Hall of Fame quarterback. But, you know, if he plays half as well as he did this past season with LSU, I mean, you're going to get a consistent quarterback. You're going to get, you know, Matthew Stafford at worst, you know, for the Bengals. And for them, that's saying a lot because they haven't had a good quarterback since Boomer Esiason. So,
yeah. Well, what about Carson Palmer?
You know,
Carson Palmer,
he was good. Oh, you're right. He was good, but his time there was limited.
Right.
It's a shame because as soon as he started really turning the corner and becoming a franchise quarterback,
yeah, I remember.
He got that devastating injury in the Steelers game in the playoffs and really never was the same after that until he kind of resurrected his career in Arizona there. But that's a good point. He was, he was definitely on the trajectory to being, you know, the next great quarterback for them. And you know, unfortunately got hurt and didn't really bounce back.
That was a real shame. I mean, you could imagine me watching a game like that and the conflicting feelings. I mean, Palmer was so great at USC as well. And I think he's just on his way to being a good, very good quarterback. And I just hated that. Why did it have to be a guy from my team, too? Like, Kiko von Olof, and nobody knows who he is anymore. Except that he sat on him. Just annoying.
It was a freak play. You know, you can't really get mad about that. You know, it happened. But, yeah, Palmer was definitely, you know, he was a likable guy. He was the next Kurt Warner. You know, that's the way I viewed him. He's, you know, stand in the pocket and just let it rip. But, you know, like I said, he did have a little bit of a resurgence there in Arizona. So good for him. And, you know that he was able to recover and play again.
Wait, are we talking about Kurt Warner or are we talking about Palmer? Because they both did the same thing, right? In that regard?
Yeah, you're right. They both, you know, had a short career, got hurt, and then came back in Arizona and thrived there.
Not too bad. So,
yeah,
not too bad.
Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't even think of that. It just came to my mind right now. And so now with Burrow, I'm so glad you made that point because I'm really not that sold on him, to be honest. But at the same time, I do think that he will probably end up being pretty good. Like, he'll be good. I think he'll be good. I don't think he's going to be necessarily great, but he'll be pretty,
right.
He'll be decent. And for Cincinnati, being decent is such a huge step up from everything they've had for the last, let's say, 15 years. I mean, it's certainly a big improvement.
Yep. Yeah, you know, and what's funny is I've been watching, you know, ESPN2 has the, they've been replaying an old draft every night. Mm-hmm. And I think it was the 1989 draft they had the other night.
Okay.
And, you know, they're talking about the Bengals. And this is actually when the Bengals were, you know, it was the year after they went to the Super Bowl and got blown out by the 49ers. But even back then, they were talking about how the ownership of the Bengals was notoriously frugal and, you know, had let, you know, 15 players, I think, walk in free agency. And they really hadn't signed anybody to replace them. And it's crazy. That's 1989. That's, what, 26
Almost
years ago?
31 years ago.
Yeah. There you go. I'm all off. There you go. So 30 years ago,
yeah.
and the same still applies. You know, there's still that frugal team who, you know, they lowball their players. They really don't participate in free agency.
Right.
You know, and they have the same formula that they use consistently, which is you build through the draft, and when the guys get you know, to the point where you have to pay them, you let them go. And and it's crazy to think that we're going on 30 years now with the, you know, where that hasn't changed. So it's a rough spot for Burrow to go into, because you know, unless that mentality in that franchise changes, you're probably not going to see you know, him surrounded with the talent that he needs. But you know, what can you do? You can't pick the teams that you go to.
No.
Unless you're Eli Manning, but you know. So you make the best of it, I guess.
Well, there's a reason why John hates him with a passion, Eli Manning. I mean,
I do not blame him.
That was a tough day for the Charger fan. Like that was rough.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the other two quarterbacks briefly. And obviously the story with Tua is injuries. It always is. And I'm not sold on him either, just from the standpoint that he can't be healthy. But even if he was healthy, I don't know if he would even be as good as Joe Burrow or really a lot of other quarterbacks in the league regardless. I mean, by now I feel like the wear and tear may eat him up. I was curious about what you thought of him.
You know, it's so hard to judge how he's going to end up, right? Because, you know, let's be honest, the Alabama team is a juggernaut in college football. And I do think he's good. And don't get me wrong, and I think he has a chance to be very good. And I mean, you go back and watch the end of the national championship they won a couple years ago when he came in and made that huge throw. I mean, the kid's got tremendous talent. He has an instinct for the game, which you can't teach. But you do have to wonder, you know, how much of his success was him growing as a quarterback, and how much of it was him playing with an entire offense of NFL draftable players.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, if you think about it, I mean, he's got two wide receivers that are going to go top 15 this year. He has two more that are probably going to go top 15 next year. He has a tackle who's going to get drafted in the top 10 this year. You know, another tackle is going to come out next year and get drafted in the top 10. I mean, he's just, Alabama is just so loaded with talent that it's really hard to judge how some of the players are going to translate to the NFL. And it especially makes it hard, with Tua because of the injuries. And it's not, you know, minor injuries here or there. I mean, he had, you know, devastating injuries. He broke his wrist a couple years ago. He had the ankle injury, which he had that fusion surgery. He hurt his hip this year, and actually hurt his hip the year before as well. So you're talking about you know, four major injuries in a 2 or 3 year span for a quarterback who isn't that big and likes to move around the pocket. So it's a risk there. And when you add it all up, you know, it's going to be a risky pick regardless of where he gets taken. You just have to hope that you can keep him healthy and you can let him sit for a while to make sure that he is healed, and take it from there and see if he could reach his potential. That's why, you know, in my opinion, the best spot for him to go to would be the Miami Dolphins. And that's just because they have no real desire to win this year. They have Fitzpatrick there for another year. Tua could get drafted there. He could sit behind Fitzgerald for the entire year, heal up, you know, get right. They have a ton of draft picks this year. They have multiple first rounders, I think, next year as well. So, you know, let him come in, sit for a year, get healthy, and then, you know, start back up in year two with a whole bunch of weapons and an offense around him that he could play, that could play to his strengths and take it from there. I think if a team drafts him and expects him to play from day one, I think you're looking at a disaster, to be honest with you, because quite frankly, I don't know if he can stay healthy if he rushes back too soon and plays right away in the NFL.
Yeah, that's a really good observation. I was curious myself as to what would be a good fit for Tua Tagovailoa in the NFL, and I think that's an interesting call. The only concern I would have in that scenario is if he ever did play that year, it doesn't look like the offensive line is that great over there. I mean, I didn't see a lot of Dolphin games, but I don't remember the offensive line being a strength.
No, it's not good, and that's why you would hope that, you know, they have three first-round picks this year. You would hope that if they do take a quarterback, if they do take him, that they at least take a tackle somewhere in that first round and, you know, build a line up through the draft, because, yeah, you can't have, you know, Tua behind a makeshift offensive line that just that has disaster, you know, written all over it.
Yeah, that definitely. I'm not familiar with the GM situation over there. I don't remember if they still have the same guy right now, but as like 3 years ago. But I agree with you. I think if they can take a tackle or a guard or somebody interior, somebody for the offensive line in the middle of this draft somewhere, first round, somebody really high, because like you said, it's a little top heavy, but if you get one of those top guys, I think that combination will be a really good draft for the Dolphins. Yeah.
Theoretically, I mean, if you wanted to, you could take two at, you know, five and package the two other first round picks to move up and get one of those tackles, and I think a smart team would do that. That's why the Dolphins probably won't do it. But if you did do that, I think that would be, you know, a great move and set up your franchise for a long time.
Yeah, definitely. I really like the potential. So we'll see if they wisen up in that area. So that brings us to the last of the big three quarterbacks. And I think at the beginning of the year, it's no question, because we can go back to our college football preview last year, and I'm sure we were all talking about Herbert as the big guy to watch in 2019, and he wasn't that at all. Like, you said it, I said it, Jonna said it, we were just not that impressed with him. He doesn't make great decisions. He's not that good of a thrower. I mean, Herbert just wound up not being that impressive at all. So, you know, is the bloom off the rose for him in your eyes?
Oh, 100%, and it was off the the bloom was off the rose really the entire year this year. And not to make it seem like he had a down year, and, you know, so he goes away as a prospect. You know, the year before he had some iffy moments too. You know, it was just that he, you know, you saw some of the potential the year before in 2018. And this past year, it seemed like that just, you know, it went away. And, you know, I'm sure we've all seen, you know, a ton of Oregon games the past couple of years. And I can tell you more times than not, after watching an Oregon game, I say to myself, why the hell does anybody think this kid is a franchise quarterback? Because, I mean, he had, yeah. I would say he probably had more duds and stinkers than dominating performances. especially this past year. I mean, you know, there was games where, you know, he's thrown for 150, you know, barely 200 yards, and Oregon's barely winning. You know, I guess the thing that worked for him is he had a good bowl game, and maybe that, you know, bought up his stock a little bit more. But
the defense he had with him was also a big factor.
Oh yeah,
and it wasn't the Rose Bowl too. Like that was a struggle for that team for like three quarters, and then they gutted it out somehow.
Yeah, you're right. And listen, you know, it's definitely, you know, the talent on that team wasn't up to maybe what everybody thought it was going to be. So I do understand that he wasn't, you know, maybe in the best situation, you know, the past couple of years, especially with Cristobal. And if you think about it, he went from, you know, an offense which was, you know, run and gun and, you know, 60 points a game to one that ran a lot of read options and really grinded out the clock the past couple of years. So maybe that does factor into it, but, you know, he made a lot of bad decisions.
And
I know I've mentioned this before on our college football shows, but, you know, it's such an easy comparison because it's the same school. But man, he reminds me a lot of the pro version of Marcus Mariota, and which is, you know, he's an okay quarterback who, you know, doesn't really do anything to win games for his team. And you just hope that he doesn't do anything to lose the game for the team, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know. If you want to take, you know, a kid that high to be a franchise quarterback, better you than me. I don't see it in him. I really don't. You know, I've heard some scouts and GMs actually put him as the top quarterback in this year's draft simply because he doesn't have an injury history. And his size, and I mean, I think it's time. I think we've had enough time in the past decade or so to see that really, you know, in today's NFL, size doesn't really matter with the quarterback position. That's such a, you know, a dinosaur way of thinking. You know, you could get by with, and I think most of the quarterbacks who are good now are, you know, 6'3" and under. I mean, you look at Russell Wilson and Drew Brees and everybody, you know, all the other guys who are at the top now. I mean, you don't really get those 6'6", you know, 225-pound quarterbacks anymore with cannons for an arm. You need to be able to move and, you know, get out of the pocket and use your feet. And so, you know, I think that argument is a bad argument to have of why he should get drafted high. You know, I'm more about looking at how he you know, controlled the game in college, and this past season was really a letdown. And I wouldn't take him high in the draft, but you know, it's almost a sure thing that he's going to go top 10. And
I just
don't see it.
maybe it might happen though, because two things. Number one, Josh Allen, way back when the Bills got him pretty high in the draft.
Yep.
Actually, three things. There was also Mitch Trubisky, who the Bears traded up to get.
Yeah.
Nobody was going to draft him at 2 or 3 or whatever they drafted him. And number three was your guy, Daniel Jones, last year.
Yeah,
I'm not sure if that was top 10,
absolutely.
But that was pretty bad.
He was the 6th pick.
Was he really?
Last year. Yeah.
My goodness. Oh,
yeah. And
boy.
Actually, you know, they had the 2014 draft on tonight on ESPN2, and that was the draft where the Jaguars actually traded up into 3 and took Blake Bortles.
Wow.
So, you know, yeah, you know, the quarterbacks always get overdrafted every single year. So you're almost assured that he's going to get overdrafted and probably go, you know, top 6, top 10 at the worst, which to me is, you know, a big mistake, but you know, it happens every year. It's going to happen this year. It's going to happen next year. It's going to happen every single year. We're going to see a quarterback who we know isn't great get drafted way too high.
Yeah, no doubt. So let's round it out with some coverage of other positions. We talked about a lot of them. We Really good job out of you breaking a lot of this down already. So we're left with linebacker and maybe tight end, but usually tight ends don't get drafted that high in the first round. So linebacker first, maybe not the best year for linebackers, but some good ones. I mean, Isaiah Simmons from Clemson and and some others. So let's get your look at the linebacker position.
Yeah, and Isaiah Simmons is definitely, you know, worthy of a top five pick, I guess. You know, with Isaiah Simmons, I mean, he's, you know, he played a lot of safety at Clemson. He's definitely a freak athlete. You know, he covers everybody, can cover everybody. He needs to go to the right defense that's going to be able to utilize him. And, you know, I don't know if any of the teams at the top of the draft where he's probably going to go are teams that can adequately use a guy like Isaiah Simmons. To me, and we had this discussion today on the board, to me, he's a guy who you put in on an already established defense and let him fly around, and he's going to be a star. If you put him on a team like the, let's say the Giants, and try to build around him, I think you might be mistaken for, you know, for taking him that high. And, you know, again, you know, going back to an old draft that they had 2017 on the other night, and the Cardinals took Hassan Reddick, if you remember that name, the kid out of Temple that year who flew up the draft boards. He was a middle linebacker, you know, freak athlete, super fast. You know, played some safety in college, said he could pass rush the passer as well. He ended up going to Arizona, and you haven't heard anything about him in the past 3 years. He barely plays. I think he's had like 2 sacks total in 3 years. So it's really tricky taking a linebacker that high. And this is something, you know, again, this is something that I've been thinking about a lot, and you know, I did, you know, my share of research on it. You know, I think if you look at all the successful teams in the NFL, and I mean like every team that's made the playoffs, that's won a Super Bowl, exclude the Patriots because they are an anomaly. They're, you know, they could plug and play any guys that, you know, that come into their system and they win. But every other team that is successful now, or you know, in the past 5 years, they're all built from the outside in. And when I say that, I mean like the defense. They have good cornerbacks and good pass rushers or edge rushers, depending on, you know, what defense they play. And on the offense, they have good receivers and good offensive tackles. And I think in today's NFL, that's the way that you build a team, is from the outside in. So I don't see the need to take a defensive tackle or a linebacker high, unless you're a team that, you know, is a playoff team already and, you know, maybe lucked out and traded up into the, you know, the top of the draft, or, you know, you had a previous year's trade where you got the pick and you're sitting there. To me, it's just, and if you think about free agency, how free agency works in the NFL, who are the guys who get the most money and are the most sought after and the hardest to sign?
Right, good
they're
point.
There's corners, pass rushers, offensive tackles, and the star wide receivers. I mean, you could talk about it. I mean, obviously everybody wants a good quarterback. They're just, you know, very hard to find, but to me, that's those are the positions that should be going at the top of the draft, and I just don't know if taking a linebacker like Isaiah Simmons in the top five is really going to be beneficial to a team who's obviously that bad to be picking in that spot. I don't think it's going to be a difference maker, but you know, he's definitely the most talented linebacker in the draft, probably the most talented defensive player as well in the draft. It's just, you know, it's hard to build around a linebacker in today's NFL. So, you know, that's my one knock against him. But you have a couple of guys. You have Kenneth Murray from Oklahoma, who's, you know, we've seen enough Oklahoma games this year, and he was flying all over the field in every game that I remember. And Patrick Queen in LSU, who was all over the field during the playoffs. So those are two other linebackers that will probably go round one, and they'll probably go towards the end of round one and to teams that are, you know, right on the cusp or are playoff teams and could probably contribute, you know, right away, and they might even have a bigger impact than a guy like Isaiah Simmons, who's probably going to go, you know, top five and be on probably a pretty bad defense.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. I mean, I think I'm going to get to know some of these guys myself. Very interesting comments on Simmons, though. I feel like that's it's important to distinguish, you know, his role on whatever team he's on. And we could ask the same question: what would be a good fit for Isaiah Simmons? Like, because you mentioned the fit itself, but like, what team would be that fit for him, you think?
You know, at the top of the draft, I don't know. You know, I know a lot of mock drafts have him going to the Giants, and I just don't see, you know, the fit there. To be honest with you, they run a 3-4. He's more of a 4-3 middle linebacker / safety. You know, I really don't know. Maybe the Buccaneers a little bit down the line in the, I think they pick 14. You know, they have a decent defense and have picked, you know, a lot of players at the top of the draft for their defense in the past couple of years. You might put him on a team like that, and he could thrive. But yeah, I mean, it's so hard to envision him at being worthy of a top 10 pick when he plays a position that really isn't, a position that you build around in today's NFL.
Right, right.
I don't know. You know, I don't know. I don't. If I had a top 10 pick, I don't think I would take him unless, you know, my defense was one piece away from being elite, and none of the teams picking in the top 10 have that luxury. So
that's true.
I mean, it's hard to find a fit for him, to be honest with you. Maybe okay. The Raiders. Maybe the Raiders right outside of the top 10. Maybe they, you know, maybe he would fit in there and could play almost like the Khalil Mack role since he's gone, and, you know, God knows they took a bunch of draft picks on defense last year. So maybe a team like that, but he's definitely going to go before them, and we'll see how he turns out. Maybe I'll be wrong. I don't know.
Well, as long as you brought up Khalil Mack, I'm curious about your thoughts on how that trade went for Chicago, because they made that trade in the offseason last year, and you mentioned all the draft picks that Oakland got back. Now Las Vegas, of course, but –
Yeah.
Was it worth it, you think? I mean, Mac had a great first few weeks, but beyond that, I think it was a little bit more up in the air. What did you think?
You know, he and again, you need a good pass rusher to be an elite team in the NFL. So I don't blame the Bears for making that pick. But you have to understand, you know, the Bears really screwed themselves, like you said, you know, when they pick Trubisky. You could add as many pieces at defense as you want. At the end of the day, when you have Mitch Trubisky as your quarterback, you're only going to go so far. And you know, hey, they were coming off of a pretty decent year and decided to go for it and get Mac. And, you know, they did make a run. They're right there. I think they made the playoffs that first year too. Or we're right there at the end. So, you know, hey, they made a move for an edge rusher who, you know, which is a position that's very hard to find elite talent, you know, now in the NFL. So I don't blame them for going for it. I think it actually might end up, you know, working out for both teams because the Raiders got to rebuild a little bit. And as long as the Bears can solve their quarterback, position, you know, they have the pieces there on the defense to be at least decent. But, you know, it's hard to overcome Mitch Trubisky as your quarterback.
He really is. And what's really hysterical is that all of us knew this is going to be bad for Chicago the moment it happened. Like the second we saw the pick, we're like, what are they doing? Like, we knew what would happen. It's just like, here's the thing. Go ahead, Ron. I'll add that point later.
Yeah, well, it's worse in retrospect because the two quarterbacks who got picked after him are Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson.
Oh,
so,
my goodness.
I mean, that makes it look, you know, that much worse when you think of it that way.
Well, the thing I was going to say is, do these guys even bother to watch college football? Because it's like they're just evaluating it based on, like, OTAs and combine stuff and practice and I don't know.
Well, and you know, the thing with Trubisky, too, if you remember it, was he sat until his senior year behind Marquise Williams, who was the quarterback at North Carolina, who, he's not in the NFL. I don't think he got drafted, and I don't think he was even picked up by a team. So Trubisky sat for 3 years behind him and really, you know, started only 1 year and wasn't, you know, lights out or anything. So it was almost like you're basing his potential on like some strange projection of, you know, his ability to run the football and be this great quarterback when there was literally like no proof that he was going to be a great quarterback. And you know, they went in all in on him, and you're seeing it blow up in their face now.
Ron, I'm going to make a statement here, and I think you're going to agree with it. Mitch Trubisky in that entire year at North Carolina, I mean, he was whatever, right? Sam Howell right. in one game against Temple in the Military Bowl showed me much more in one game than Mitch Trubisky did that entire season. He really showed me some juice. I really think that he could be the future.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Howell's fun to watch. He's really fun to watch. And yeah, if he, you know, stays healthy in the next couple of years, he's definitely going to be a big-time quarterback. So I agree 100%.
Yeah, and you know, whether they even – I mean, I think at this point he would be, what, a sophomore maybe or a redshirt freshman or whatever, but because he only played that one
game.
He was
a true freshman last year.
Okay.
So he'll be a sophomore next year.
All right. Well, I mean, again, we go back to the topic of when will they play football again, but if they somehow get in a season, my goodness, that's going to be a fun year for North Carolina.
Yeah, they're definitely one of those teams who are trending in the right direction. And you know, obviously he's the big reason why. But yeah, hopefully we see some college football this year and can talk about it and see these the next wave of these guys.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so let's just give you a chance to run down some potential sleepers. Let's see, what do you see there? Or do you want to do that after our mock? Do you want to do the mock first and then the sleepers, or do you want to do the sleepers and then the mock?
Yeah, we could do sleepers first.
Okay.
I mean, that's fine.
All right.
Let me think. I'll give you some, you know, like we discussed, the wide receiver class is so deep this year, but one of the guys who I love, and I've seen his name like move up to the second round now, but you're obviously really familiar with him, Michael Pittman from USC. I think has the real potential to be a really good wide receiver. Just off the top of my head, the game that they played this year against Utah, when they beat Utah, and Utah has two guys in their secondary who are going to, you know, they're going to be drafted this year. They're draftable players. And Pittman, you know, controlled that game. He made, I mean, just big catch after big catch. You know, I think he's a big guy. He's fast. He's definitely somebody who I think can, you know, translate well to the NFL. And I think whoever gets him in the second round is going to get a guy who, you know, is going to start eventually and probably be a pretty good, you know, wide receiver in the NFL. Another wide receiver who is a bit of a sleeper who I like is Van Jefferson out of Florida. He's a guy who has been consistent the past couple of years, you know, with spotty quarterback play. His dad is a wide receiver coach actually for the Jets, which is probably why, you know, I'm kind of rooting for the kid. But he's good. He's right now he's projected in the third or fourth round. I think he's a guy who would come in and contribute right away. Running backs, I really like Zach Moss out of Utah, who really, I mean, he carried that team for the past couple seasons, and you don't hear enough about him. He's probably going to go somewhere in rounds three or four, but I think he's a guy who, you know, will definitely be a contributor right away in the NFL. I like his potential. On the defensive side, I like the kid from Michigan State, the edge rusher, Kenny Willickis, whatever his name is, the guy from Michigan State. He'll go somewhere in rounds three or four. He's a guy who, you know, I saw a couple Michigan State games, and every time, you know, I saw Michigan State, he was all over the field. I mean, he's just a guy who probably doesn't have a lot of you know, natural athletic ability, but he's got a nonstop motor and always gets to the quarterback. So I think a guy like that is always useful in the NFL now. I'm trying to think of anybody else. I'll give you one out of the blue who might end up being, you know, better than we all think, and that's Thaddeus Moss, the tight end from LSU, who most expected to go back this year for his senior year because he didn't really play a lot until the playoffs. But as Randy Moss's son, not as big or as athletic as Randy Moss, but yeah. he made big catch after big catch in the playoffs.
That's true.
And he's a kid, you know, if he goes to the right situation and gets put, you know, doesn't have to be a day one starter, can just contribute and maybe grow for a year or two. I think he's someone who can be a real steal. And, you know, he's someone who could go, you know, fifth, sixth, seventh round. And I would bet, you know, at that point in the draft, I'd bet on someone's bloodline and talent just as much as any other factor. So I think he has a chance to do it.
That's an interesting call because, you know, like you said, not a lot of sample size to work with in terms of what we saw, but mm-hmm. man, he does have potential. That's really true. And to do it in a big
right.
spot.
And LSU doesn't really use a tight end, which is another reason why he didn't, you know, really jump off the screen in terms of stats throughout this past year. But man, he was big in the playoffs, and you know, I'll bet on his talent, you know, any day of the week. See, you know, especially when you see the level of tight ends that are playing in today's NFL. I mean, there's a bunch of stinkers out there. So why not take a chance on a kid like that?
Oh, yeah. And you'll find teams that'll make good use of that out of the tight end position. We see it in San Francisco. We used to see it with New England. We might still see it in New England this year with a different regime, yep. different quarterback. By the way, Ron, what'd you think about Gronkowski going over to Tampa Bay to join Brady, you know, on the Bucs?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I don't know. I've seen him in you know, he's been doing like the wrestling thing, mm-hmm. and you know, doing those weird, like he hosted that Super Bowl party and you know whatnot, and he does not look like the same player that, you know, played in New England. He looks like a guy who's half the size, you know, but hey, listen, maybe that year off helped him heal up, you know, because he's a guy who had a ton of injuries.
Yeah.
Mentally, maybe it got him refreshed a little bit. You know, maybe he spends the next few months bulking back up. And I mean, you know, it's worth taking, you know, a chance on them. Because if you think about it, Tampa Bay has got, you know, you got Bruce Arians there who's, you know, 75 plus years old, I think.
Yeah.
He's one of the oldest coaches in the league, so he doesn't have much time. You know, he obviously views it as a win now situation. So, you know, you get a chance to get Tom Brady and bring back Rob Gronkowski. You know, you have new jerseys to sell. I mean, you immediately, you know, will fill up the stadium. and give yourself a chance to actually compete in a division that really is controlled by the Saints and nobody else. So, yeah. I think it was a good move by them.
Why not, right?
Right. What's the worst that happens? Yeah. I mean, it was either, you know, get Brady and Gronkowski or you stick with Jameis Winston for another year. And to be honest with you, if I was a Bucs fan, I'd rather see Brady and Gronkowski. You know, you've seen enough of Jameis Winston to know what you have. And, you know, he has talent around him, that's for sure. So why not go for it?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I think you've got talent that, it pretty much like most of the key skill positions except for tight end, and there you go. I mean, I forgot what the scenario was with O.J. Howard. I don't know if they're going to keep him or what's going to happen or if he's going to be a backup or what, but that'll be an interesting
one. Yeah, I think they're definitely going to shop him and try to trade him. He had a lot of drops the past year or two, and I think, they even started to throw more to Cameron Brate, the backup, than O.J. Howard. So O.J. Howard's a kid with a ton of talent, but he just he wasn't consistent enough to be a big-time threat, and I think you're going to see him go somewhere else and try to start back over.
Yeah, I think – I can see that. I think you make a good point there, Ron. So we go from that, and we go into our mock draft. This year I'm going to let you have control of the board, and I'll just comment on each pick and see whether I feel like – we are predicting what they do, and I'm basically evaluating whether they made the right choice. So, Ron, I'll give it to you for the first pick, which goes to the Bengals, and I don't even think I need to ask you who they're going to draft because I think we know. But let's make it official.
I think they take Joe Burrows, and you know, hopefully for us, they don't make us wait the whole 10 minutes, and they just they just do the selection because I mean, we know he's going to be their pick, and it should be a no-brainer.
Yeah, no doubt. From the Bengals' point of view, this is like a non-decision. So I'm with you.
Right.
Redskins at number two.
Well, they have to take the first two picks are set in stone. I think they have to take Chase Young, and they have a bunch of talent on defense. Actually, if you think about it. I mean, they have Ryan Kerrigan. They took Montez Sweat last year. So Chase Young is just adding to the mix. But, I mean, you can't have enough edge rushers in the NFL. And he is I think he's going to be super good. I mean, you take him and you don't even think twice about it. I think the Redskins are going to take Chase Young and let him fly around.
That's cool because – If he does pan out and if he stays healthy, with the Redskins fan base, he's going to be a superstar in the NFL.
Yeah.
They are a big deal.
Agreed.
So, all right, let's go to the Lions. They are at number three.
Yeah, this is where the draft really starts because after pick one and two, they could go in a million different directions, literally a million, Any of the players you could theoretically fit into Detroit because they have so many holes across the entire team. But I'll say, they traded Darius Slay to the Eagles this offseason. I think they go cornerback. I think they go Jeff Okuda, the cornerback from Ohio State. That's what I would do if I was them. They could go, a million different ways because they need help everywhere on the defense. It's an indictment of how poorly the GM and Matt Patricia have built that team to say that they need help basically anywhere. I'll say that they go Jeff Okuda to replace Darius Slay in the secondary.
Yeah, the upshot of it is they can't lose with whoever they pick, at least in theory. But you never know. They could trade up. They could trade down and get somebody else. So, man,
I think they're they're the most likely team that trades down, and they should be doing everything in their power to trade down because the value just isn't there at three to sit there and take any of the players. I mean, they should be looking to trade back, and they could still get any of the guys that they could at three, but. It's easier said than done. You always need that team to want to move up, and I don't know if any team's going to want to do that this year.
Oh, interesting. Right. So because the two biggest names are by that point are off the board unless something strange happens. So let's go to the Giants at four. And I think we can ask the same question about them. I mean, of course, the problem is we are making that evaluation assuming that the GM is competent. We know he's not. So what do we what do they do?
Yeah, you know, I think there's a real chance that they take Isaiah Simmons. But in the at the end of the day, I think Gettleman goes to what he loves the most, and that's the offensive line, defensive line. You know, he loves those hog mollies. You know, he's going to end up, I think the Giants are going to take an offensive tackle, and I'll give them Tristan Wirfs, the right tackle out of Iowa, who they could start at right tackle. I mean, they really have nobody at right tackle. They have Nate Solder at left tackle, who's been a huge disappointment. So they could play him at right tackle this year and then slide him over to left tackle, you know, after the season when Solder's gone. So I'll say they take Tristan Wirfs out of Iowa.
Based on what I see for the draft position, well, draft talent rankings, that seems like a little bit of a reach, but it seems very canon. However, I think that would be a good pick.
Yeah, I do too, and it is a bit of a reach. And I have you know, I've talked to Giants fans who, if they take a tackle, they would rather them trade down. Mm-hmm. And take a tackle. And again, that's easier said than done. You need to find a team that actually wants to give up that draft capital to get up to your pick. And, you know, usually if a team's trading up, it's for a quarterback. And this year, I just don't think that the teams that need a quarterback need to trade up. I think they could sit back and let the picks fall to them. So that eliminates the you know, the ability for a team like the Giants to trade down. So I think Gettleman will end up staying there and he'll take an offensive tackle.
Yeah. I mean, this is probably a case where I wouldn't kill him for it. I mean, last year we had every reason, we had reason to kill him. This, I don't kill that one. All right.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, Daniel Jones was definitely one of the biggest surprise picks that I can ever remember.
It's amazing you called
that,
though.
And we'll see how that plays out, but... Yeah, yeah, you know, but that's another good point because, you know, you need to protect him if he is your who you believe is your long-term answer at quarterback. So take a tackle and try to build that way.
Yeah. All right. So let's go to number five, the Dolphins. You projected a pretty interesting scenario that would be very beneficial to them with Tua, but in actuality, how do you see them picking?
Yeah, I think that they take Tua. I would if I was them. You know, I know there's been some rumors the past couple of days that they would actually want to take a tackle at number five and try to, you know, maneuver around after that to move up and get a quarterback. But, you know, take Tua and worry. You have two other first-round picks you could use to move up and take somebody else. So I think they take him and they, you know, in my opinion, it's the most ideal fit. He could sit for, you know, most of the year and play behind Fitzpatrick and then become the face of the franchise.
All right. Yeah, I mean, hopefully they execute all the aspects of that. It sounds like a very attainable objective. So I would.
It is, but it's the Dolphins.
Right. So, yeah. Absolutely.
You never know.
Yep. You never know. So now to six and the Chargers.
You know, I think they have to go quarterback. So I'll say they take Justin Herbert. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I mean, who else do they have on their roster right now? They have Tyrod Taylor. So unless they're, you know, and you know, if we play this year, they're, you know, they have the new uniforms that they just came out with. They're playing in the new stadium. You would think they would want some juice there. I think you get that juice with, you know, a first round quarterback. So I think they will take Justin Herbert. If I was them, I would probably go another route, maybe try to sign, you know, Cam Newton instead, and do something else with that pick, but I don't know how likely that is. So, I'll say as of today, they'll take Herbert at 6.
You know, to be honest, I think they will trade down. I feel like that is more likely, the scenario you positioned with Cam or somebody else like that, somebody of similar caliber.
Jameis Winston.
Well, Winston would be, yeah. Whoa, wow.
but he's out there. He's out there, and, you know, and they could trade for Andy Dalton. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, there's guys who, you know, they might not be great, but they, you know, can start in the NFL. And, I mean, if you go that route and you use the pick on something else, I think it would probably be beneficial for the team. But, yeah, I don't know. I just I see them going Herbert. Or, you know, if Tua's there, going to it, you know. But right. I think they'll come away out of the first round with a quarterback.
I think that's what the Chargers are going to root for. They're going to root for someone to pass on Tua so that they can take him. And then you got the juice.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if they pick Herbert, yeah, I mean, if they stay with the pick, then that's probably the pick they make. So it's probably right. it's logical.
It yep. is.
All right, so let's go to Carolina with the 7th pick. Where are the Panthers going?
I'll have them taking Isaiah Simmons, the linebacker / safety out of Clemson. And, you know, I think Matt Rhule, you know, he's going to want as much talent as he could get. And you know, like I said before, I don't know if he's someone you build a defense around. But, you know, Carolina's been known for their linebackers the past decade or so with Sam Mills and then, who's the guy who just retired?
Luke Kuechly.
Luke Kuechly, yeah. Man, I blanked out for a second. But, yeah, so they've been known for their linebackers. So I'll say they go with Simmons to get the maybe the most talented defensive player in the draft and get him at 7 is, I would think, in their mind, a steal. But, again, you need to add a bunch of pieces around him to really maximize the investment there.
Yeah, they're probably going for the pop, too, since, you know, since Clemson is so close to Charlotte.
Yeah.
It yep. makes sense. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you'd think Good that point. That wouldn't be a big deal, but... It is. It is. I've seen a lot of teams.
Yeah. Hey, the NFL is a business, right? You yeah. want to, you want to get guys in there that will, you know, sell tickets and sell jerseys. So, yeah, I could definitely see that.
Yeah, and probably maybe a little more so in the South because college football is so big there. But that's just my
100%.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's go to number 8. And at 8 is the Cardinals.
The Cardinals, I think they will take, and man, the Cardinals is a tough one. I think they take Derek Brown, the defensive tackle out of Auburn. Again, I'll reiterate, my opinion is you don't take defensive tackles high in the draft anymore. Maybe it's because I've been burned so many times by the Jets who take defensive tackles every year. and none of them really pan out.
Yeah, would you say the most disappointing one in recent vintage was the guy from USC that I used to know?
Leonard Williams.
Leonard Williams, yeah.
Yeah, just because, I mean, when he came out, you know, he had, he had the projection to be, you know, the next dominant defensive player, and he certainly showed it at USC, but like I said, it just doesn't translate into today's NFL. You know, and another thing with defensive tackles coming out of college, you know, there's a reason why good college offensive tackles get moved to guard in the NFL. It's because, you know, the guards that these guys are playing against in college are, you know, 270, 280 pounds. They're not the best athletes. So you get a guy like Leonard Williams or, you know, this year Derek Brown, they could dominate those interior guys. But once you put them in the NFL against, you know, the 320-pounders who played tackle in college and now moved inside the guard, I mean, it's a whole different story. And you see them almost immediately lose their effectiveness that they showed in college. And that's another reason why I wouldn't take a defensive tackle high, but you know, that's just me speaking there. But the Cardinals need all the help on the defense that they could get. So I think they'll take Derek Brown if he's there.
All right. On to nine, and it is the Jaguars.
Jaguars, man, it's such a weird team. And man, they've traded everybody away who's good and continue to do so. But I think they will be in desperate need of a cornerback. And I'll say they take C.J. Henderson, the cornerback from Florida. Another scenario similar to Isaiah Simmons going to the Panthers. You get a local kid who played in Jacksonville for the Florida Gators. So you have that aspect, but they also need someone to replace Jalen Ramsey, who they traded away last year. So I'll say they go C.J. Henderson, who has been flying up draft boards recently and who some people have rated ahead of Jeffrey Okuda from Ohio State.
Yeah, you know what? I was talking with my friends in emails, and they definitely are just as high on Henderson. That is very interesting. So we'll see if he ends up getting ahead on the draft board come tomorrow. So
yep.
Now let's go to the Browns. We know the Browns have made their own blunders over the years, but they say they have a new regime, yeah. So maybe it'll be different.
They have a new regime every year, don't they?
Exactly.
There's talk about them trading for Trent Williams, the tackle from the Redskins. So I think if that actually goes through by tomorrow, then this pick is a crapshoot, because I think they're right now. I mean, they're earmarked for an offensive tackle. So if they get Williams from the Redskins, everything changes. But until that happens, I say they'll take an offensive tackle, and I'll give them Andrew Thomas, the offensive tackle from Georgia, who, was probably the best tackle prospect all year until really the season ended. And, you started seeing some other guys maybe pass him a little bit in the scouts' eyes. But I think they'll go, if they stay there and need a tackle, they'll go with Andrew Thomas.
All right. And now coming up next with the 11th pick, your beloved Jets, where do you see them going?
Well, definitely not a defensive tackle this year, which is, the biggest positive I could take from it. they need help on the offensive line. They need help at wide receiver. And the good thing about this, if it does play out the way I think it will, is they'll have their pick really of, who they want to take. But I say Joe Douglas, the new GM. He's an offensive line guy. I think they go offensive line and get a tackle to protect Sam Darnold. So I'll say they go Jedrick Wills, the offensive tackle from Alabama.
Cool. Yeah, that'd be a nice pick. Yeah, very nice. So that's the Jets. Now to number 12 and the Raiders.
Yeah, I think this is where the run on the wide receiver starts. And I think they'll go CeeDee Lamb, the wide receiver from Oklahoma, who reminds me a lot of DeAndre Hopkins. So if you're getting a guy like that at number 12, I mean, you run the pickup. Well, there's not a podium this year, but you call the pick in as quickly as you can. I think that'd be they need wide receiver help, and I think he'll be a really good one.
Another team that needs a wide receiver, since you basically said this already, 49ers. So yeah, this the run of wide receivers is on for sure. I got to think that they pick one. What do you say? What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm looking at the receiver that they drafted last year, Deebo Samuel, and how he plays. I mean, he's more of that over the middle, tough physical receiver who catches everything. So when you're asking who would they choose between Jerry Jeudy and Henry Ruggs, I think Jeudy is more in the same vein as a Deebo Samuel, while Ruggs is more explosive and is a threat to score every time he touches the ball. So I'll say that they go, as a complimentary for Deebo Samuel, they go Henry Ruggs, the wide receiver from Alabama.
Well, interesting. So you're going to go Ruggs. And yeah, I think that's true, though, because not only is Samuel kind of a physical guy, but George Kittle, too, right? Like, as a tight end.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Yeah, both in the same mold. And I think you need a little bit of that variety there. And I think that's what they were missing last year.
Yeah.
A little bit was that guy that stretched the field. And they used Marquis Goodwin in that role for a while. And, you know, he's on his way out. So, yeah, I'd say Henry Ruggs would be a great fit for them.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great, great call. They need the speed, and I think that'll definitely keep the defenses honest. That's a great call. So, by the way, the 49ers got that pick by way of the Indianapolis Colts. So, a very interesting, very keen decision, I think, because if they make the pick the way we think, this is going to be a big boost to their offense. All right, so now to the 14 and the Bucks. Now they have Brady and Gronk, so this gets interesting for them. Where do you think they would go?
Yeah, I mean, the logical decision, if it plays out the way I see it playing out, is to go offensive tackle to protect Brady and Gronk and everybody else. So I'll say that they take Mekhi Becton, the offensive tackle from Louisville. Huge kid. You know, he's an ex-basketball player. He's like 6'7", like 350, and I've seen videos of him just like throwing down dunks like it's nothing. Freak athlete. I think he'll be really good in the NFL. So I think if he's there for the Bucks, I think they should take him and protect Brady for as long as they can.
All right, let's continue. We can go all the way through the draft if you want. I mean, I don't know how far you projected your mock draft. Do you go all the way through the first round?
I mean, I can. I don't have anything in front of me, but I have it pretty much off the top of my head. So we can go play on if you want.
That's really good off the top of your head. Wow, that's incredible. That's incredible memory. Like, that's really good.
Yeah, I've had too much time on my hands being at home. So you know,
understood.
It's a good and a bad thing, right?
I'll bring us down to maybe about 22 or 23. Maybe like 23. I want to see what you think of the Saints. So where are we now? Oh, we're at 15. Okay, the Broncos. That's going to get interesting. So I think they finally moved on from Joe Flacco, as far as I know. So
yeah,
what would they do with a 15th pick in the first round?
Yeah, I think at this point, you know, if Jerry Jeudy's still available, they have to take him. You team him with Courtland Sutton, and you give you know, they're all in on Drew Lock from. You know, from everything I've seen. So you give him weapons and try to build around him and you know, really improve that offense. So, and Jerry Jeudy is the guy who, like I said, there's other years where he would probably go top five. So if I'm the Broncos, I would, you know, pick him in a heartbeat if he's there.
Oh, very nice. Wait, who was it again? I was just...
Jerry Jeudy.
Oh, Jeudy,
the
right,
receiver
right.
From Alabama.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, that'd be fun to watch.
Yeah, absolutely.
Alabama, that'd be interesting. Well, they can certainly use the help. I mean, they were one of the worst offenses to watch, and I don't know what the stats were. I was just watching the game like, oh my God, this offense is so bad.
Yeah, they improved at the end of, last year when they actually did let Locke play and throw the ball, but, I mean, he was thrown to... Like I said, Courtland Sutton had a breakout year last year, but besides him, I mean, he was thrown to nobody. I don't even know. I don't even know if I could tell you who the other receivers are in the Broncos. So, I mean, you try to build up that offense around Drew Lock and at least give him a fighting chance to be a good player.
Right. Yeah. So now to 16, and that is the Atlanta Falcons. What where do you see them drafting?
Yeah, they're another team that needs like a ton of help everywhere on defense, especially even the offensive line. And I don't think that they'll be able to trade up and get an offensive lineman. They need cornerbacks in the worst way. I think this is a spot where maybe they reach for a corner, and I'll have them take in Christian Fulton, the cornerback from LSU.
Okay. LSU's going to have a lot of representation in this first round, I can see. Next up is...
Yeah.
I mean, they got to...
Dan...
Yeah, what a year, right?
Yeah, the The NFL Network guy, Daniel Jeremiah, he actually, you know, tweeted something out, I think, the other day, and he said, you know, if you want to succeed this year in the draft, you just, all you have to do is take somebody from LSU. So,
yeah.
You know, there's definitely going to be a bunch of guys available from them. Yeah.
That's really something. It's really something. It makes you excited if you are an LSU fan. What's the next generation of NFL quality talent going to look like? It'll be very exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Who do you think is going to... Nah, let's save that for the college football preview. I'll ask you that question about LSU quarterbacking later. But...
Yeah.
2-17, we have the Cowboys sitting there, and yeah, another team with holes, I think. So let's see what do you think they will do with that pick?
Yeah, I mean, and they're another team that needs a cornerback. I don't think there's one that they could reach for there. You know, they let Byron Jones go in free agency. You know, I know they bought Alden Smith back into the NFL to be a pass rusher. They need help on defense. I'll say they go safety, and I'll say they go Xavier McKinney, the safety from Alabama.
Okay. Now let's go to 18 and the Dolphins from the Steelers.
Well, if the Dolphins keep this pick, they have to, you know, I would think they have to take a tackle, an offensive tackle. So I'll have them going Austin Jackson, the offensive tackle from USC, who's been a draft riser the past month or so. So I think they get the best tackle they can at 18 and try to protect Tua for the future.
Yeah, that's good stuff. And it is a good reminder that, as you reminded me during our football week, football pick shows, that USC's offense has actually been pretty good in the last few years. We've had a lot of good representation in the draft from USC. I say we as in the league. But I was criticizing that, and I realized that my criticism was a little bit misguided, because you not only have had guys like... Even Darnold, I think, has a lot of potential,
right.
Very good ceiling. We know about Juju Smith-Schuster, who's just doing a dynamite things at with the Steelers, and that is just the beginning. I mean, we're seeing guys even in the making, like Keaton Slovis, who just really broke out last year, amazing year for him, and then you have the opportunity for some of the support guys, and Austin Jackson is one of them. You also mentioned Pittman, who is apparently, you know, who could really be very interesting, as he's mentioned, if he does pan out. That's another great wide receiver that the Trojans have sent to the NFL. So that's really cool.
Yeah, you know, they're a team who, you know, they have the talent. I don't know if that's an indictment on anybody but Clay Helton that, you know, they've had draftable talent.
Yeah.
You know, for the past 3 or 4 years, and they're in a really winnable league, and they can't get over that hump. But they certainly, you know, they're still there, you know, recruiting 4 and 5 star guys and developing them. They're just not, you know, getting over that hump on the field.
Yeah. And I think the one, and I'll add one other point as to my observations of the top 18 so far, and it's a whole lot of SEC and Ohio State. It's basically SEC teams and Ohio State, only a couple exceptions, Oregon, Iowa, and Louisville, and I think that was it. So that's the dominance.
Well, that's where the talent is, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's if you look at the recruiting classes every year, I mean, it's Ohio State, Georgia, Alabama, and Clemson.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't see that changing anytime soon.
No, I don't either. I mean, this year, I feel like those three teams will be in the playoff again. So it's inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's finish this out. We've got 19, and the Raiders have another pick. They got this from the Bears. So what do you see from the Raiders?
Yeah, I think they'll take a linebacker.
Okay.
They need a linebacker help. I'll say they take Kenneth Murray, the linebacker from Oklahoma.
Okay. Now the Jaguars at 20.
Yeah, their second pick, and I think again they need help on every level of defense. I'll say they take Javon Kinlaw, the defensive tackle from South Carolina, which would be a slam dunk pick at number 20.
Oh yeah, that would be nice. So now the Eagles at 21.
They need a receiver in the worst way. I think they go Justin Jefferson, the wide receiver from LSU, who big, fast, you know, great speed height combination guy. I think they run, you know, to draft him. They need all the wide receiver help they can get.
Yeah, he definitely showed it on the college level. He was really flashy, really good, very exciting player to watch. Next,
yep.
Let's see, 22 for the Vikings from the Bills.
The Vikings are another team who needs a wide receiver after they traded Stephon Diggs. And they're a team that doesn't have that many holes, but definitely they created one for themselves. So I'll say that they go Denzel Mims, the wide receiver from Baylor, who is flying up the draft boards as well.
Did the Vikings make the trade, you think? Because the Bills sent a lot back for to make that happen. That is very interesting. That was a very interesting decision, I think. What do you think?
Yeah. You know, I think it was a situation where the Vikings viewed it as addition by subtraction, simply because Stephon Diggs obviously wasn't happy there anymore. And he made that known, you know, frequently on social media, and, you know, questioned the coach and the quarterback multiple times. So I think it was a situation for them where they, you know, they got a first round pick out of it. And, you know, I think that was good enough for them.
You know, I think you're right too. I mean, as good as Diggs has been, I think that a first round pick out of that is a good trade for Minnesota. I agree with you. I think that.
Yeah, I agree. Especially with his contract that he just signed, and, you know, his production diminished last year. Mm-hmm. You know, getting a first round pick for him, in my opinion, is a no brainer. You do that every day of the week.
100%. I just feel like a wide receiver's window isn't that big in actuality. It's just like you get like 3 or 5 years, I think. And then.
Right. And it's, yeah. And especially for a guy like him, you have to wonder how much of his production was his own talent, and how mm-hmm. much of it was, you know, playing with Thielen, who commanded a lot of the number one cornerbacks on the opposing team. So risky move by the Bills, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Great points. So now to 23, and the Patriots in, do we say rebuilding mode at this point? I got to say so, yeah.
Oh, they you have to view them in that way, right? I mean, they don't have a quarterback on the roster. They have Brian Hoyer and Jared Stidham, and you know, I if they go with those guys going into the season, I'd be shocked. So I say at this spot, they take Jordan Love, the quarterback from Utah State, who would have benefited from staying in college another year. He had a really, really up and down year this year. The year before, he looked phenomenal and was definitely pegged as one of those you know, rising quarterbacks, and just didn't play up to his expectations this year. And I don't know if that was because Utah State graduated so many guys the year before, but whatever the reason, I think a lot of people view him you know, almost as Patrick Mahomes light, you know, because he can move around so well and he has a big arm. So I think the Patriots need to take a quarterback. So I'll give them Jordan Love at 23.
All right. Well, we'll see if it works out for him. And we'll close our mock at 24. And at the 20, with the 24th pick, we have the New Orleans Saints.
Yeah, and if Love doesn't go to the Patriots, I actually think the Saints would take him and let him, you know, back up Breeze for the future, because, I mean, this is, by all accounts, going to be his last year. They need a receiver, too, but I don't know if one's going to be there that they love. I'll say they stick in-state, and they draft Patrick Queen, the linebacker from LSU. They need somebody on the outside. A linebacker on the outside to cover the tight ends in the NFC, like George Kittle, and even, you know, Travis Kelce with the Chiefs. If they want to continue to play against the top teams and be one of those top teams, they need someone to cover the tight end. So I'll say they take Patrick Queen from LSU.
Cool. All right. Well, that was really, really great. Ron, thank you so much for breaking all of that down. Really good job going all the way to 24. I mean, I think if you had done it in reverse and asked me to pick somebody at 24, I would have been pretty lost. So that's a tribute to you and your incredible research and your and prep.
Hey, I love the draft every year. You know, it gives me something to look forward to, and especially I think more so this year with you know, with everything going on, it gives you a reason to delve back into sports and get lost for a little bit. So I welcome it, and you know, I can't wait till tomorrow night, actually.
Yeah, it'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it too. And I even have it DVR'd just in case I'm late. I can just go back and watch, you know, what I missed. And since I'm not really on Twitter right now, I won't have to worry about getting spoiled by about the picks. So.
Yeah, you're not missing anything, buddy.
I heard. So I'll give it to you for some final thoughts, Ron, and then we'll close it up.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, I'm looking forward to it. You know, it's going to be certainly different, but, you know, that might be a good thing because we should get some entertainment out of it, especially if Microsoft crashes and the whole thing goes down. So, I mean, it just gives you all the more reason to watch, and, you know, at least we have something for a couple days to distract us from everything going on in the world. So I can't wait. I welcome it.
Well, Ron, enjoy it, and I will do the same. It's been a lot of fun breaking this down with you, and thanks, and continued best wishes to your family and yourself, and down the road, we'll hopefully meet again.
Yeah, hopefully we have our college football preview this summer, and we have that back and in full effect, and we could get together and start another year of the Kids Club action. So I look forward to it, Dave. It's good talking to you, man.
Likewise, man. Take care, my friend. Good to talk to you.
All right, Dave.
Take
you
care,
too.
Man. Good times. Bye. Thank you, Ron. That's awesome to have Ron back. And I mean, the feeling is mutual and all that. I love to have another football season to talk about again. Making bad picks and blowing a lot of units on bad decisions with from football handicapping, but it's all right. For now, we will enjoy the draft, and we go on to the P next week. We'll see you next time.